Hello. Hello. Yeah, we're streaming. So that's good. It's not quite 6 o'clock yet, so I'm gonna try to kill some time on the stream. Goodness. Anywho, I am calling it now. We're starting. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Dormo Show, the inaugural first episode. And so we all understand, this first episode is in the key of D. Oh, the cat's here. Alsbeth. Alsbeth hearing all the commotion and wanted to come out. So I'm sure this episode sounds like shit because, oh goodness, Alsbeth, I'm walking around with a laptop right now. Yeah, I don't know what I'm doing. There's not a whole lot of support for what I'm doing. I have an Icecast server. I'm using some software called Butt, which stands for, excuse me, it's my stream. I'll say whatever I want. I can curse. I can do whatever I want. It's called Butt, B-U-T-T, broadcast using this tool. And it's pretty archaic, but it is, you know, modern, up-to-date, kind of. It works. And I don't know. It's not everything I need yet, but it's a start. Okay, it's a start. And yeah, so I guess I'll take a moment right now and give you my manifesto for this. So this is a total rejection of streaming services like Twitch, YouTube streaming, all that shit. Self-hosted streaming. That's what I want to do. I want to self-host my own audio-only stream, like radio, but on the internet. That's all this is. That's all I'm trying to do. Oof. And, yeah. There's a lot of problems with it so far. Like, the big thing is there's just a lack of software support. Icecast 2 is archaic. It's very old. OBS is what software people typically use to stream. It doesn't work with it, or it does, but through a very hacky and limited way, which is, you know, not great. Everything is just very, it's just rough. Okay. And, I'm still trying to figure it out. Last week I couldn't figure it out at all, but this week I'm using Butt as my source client and I think I'm recording and I'm streaming. It's very rough, but we're making it work. So yeah, hopefully next week I'll have some stuff figured out. It'll be a lot cooler. I was so planned, but, yeah. Oof. So, I guess we're going to say this episode's about done. I'm going to do one thing just to finish this episode out and read an excerpt from the book Heartbreak, The Political Memoir of a Feminist Militant by Andrea Dworkin, which is her autobiography. Anyway, I'm just going to read a bit. I'm going to read one chapter called Music 3. I haven't read it in a few months, so probably about 6-7 months. About 6 months, I'd say. So, hopefully it's entertaining. Music 3. There was jazz and Bessie Smith. When I'd cut high school or college and go to 8th Street in New York City, I'd find used albums. I'd listen to every jazz great I could find. My best friend in high school particularly liked Maynard Ferguson, a white jazz man. I went to hear him at the Steel Pier in Atlantic City when I was a kid. I also went to hear Ricky Nelson at the Steel Pier. I stood among hundreds of screaming girl teens, but up front, the teens who fainted, I am here to tell you, fainted from the heat of South Jersey summer, misspent in a closed ballroom. Still, I adored Ricky and Pat Boone and, special among specials, Tab Hunter with his cover of Red Sails in the Sunset. There was no gambling then, just miles of boardwalk with penny arcades, cotton candy, saltwater taffy, root beer sodas, and frosted glass mugs, and sand ocean music. I listened to Coltrane, had a visceral love of Charlie Parker that I still have, listened to Casey blues covers when I could find them. When I was a teen, I also came across Billie Holiday, and her voice haunts me to this day. I can hear it in my head any time. And with Strange Fruit and God Bless the Child, she sounded more like a blues singer than a jazz woman. But the bulk of her work, which I later heard, was jazz. It was her voice that was blues. When her voice wasn't blues, it meant the heroine had dragged her way down and she couldn't go lower. Strange Fruit was worth anything it took from her, and so was God Bless the Child. I'm not happy with art as necrophilia, but I think these two songs, and Strange Fruit in particular, were worth her life. They'd be worth mine. My brother, Mark, and I both had a taste for the Ahmed Jamal Quartet. I loved the live jazz in the clubs, the informal jazz I found live in the apartments of various lovers, and I wanted to hear anyone I was lucky enough to hear about. I craved jazz music, and the black world was where one found it. There was a tangle of sex and jazz, black culture and black male love. There was a Gordian knot made of black men and Jewish white women in particular. Speaking only for myself, I wasn't going to settle in the suburbs, and in New York City meant black, jazz meant black, blues meant black. Philadelphia, in contrast, had folk music and coffee houses with live performers. Most were white. I liked Dan Von Runk and her junior high school stole an album of his from a big Philadelphia department store. Or maybe it was the bearded white face on the album cover, the archetype egging me on. My best friend in high school liked the Philly scene, and with its scuzzy, mostly failed musicians and its folk scene. I go with her when I could because Philly promised excitement, though it rarely delivered. She and I flirted with a small bohemia, not life-threatening, whereas I was alone in New York City, there was no net. In the environs of Philly, I went to hear Joan Baez, whose voice was splendid, and I listened to folk music on record, Baez, Buffy St. Marie, and Ramblin' Jack Elliott, who's rambled in those days mostly in Philadelphia. These took me back to Woody Guthrie, Leadbelly, and Cisco Houston. By the time Bob Dylan came along, I was uninterested in the genre altogether until some friends in college made me sit down and listen to Dylan Soi Meme. I don't even know what that word is. The French? I don't know. Back to the reading. Even though it was his politics that moved me, not his music, that changed. It changed the first time because he was an acquired taste. Enough listening, I acquired sufficient love of the music with lyric to be one with my generation. And it changed the second time, years later, maybe decades later, when his marriage fell apart, and I found out he had been a batterer. He lost me. I can't claim any purity on this because I've never lost my taste for Miles Davis, and he was really a bad guy to women, including through battery. So I love old Miles, but I sure do have trouble putting on any CD of his in the machine. In Amsterdam, I met Ben Webster, but so did any white girl. He was way past his prime, but he still played his heart out. I remember the saliva dripping from his lips and the sweat that blanketed his fat body, or the visible parts of it.
He'd sit in the sun in Light's Lane. He always wore a suit, and he'd be the Pied Piper. I wish he had been the Fats Waller, whom I've discovered on CD. I heard B.B. King in concert a few times there, and the band once. I love B.B., whom I met years later, and I love the band. But it was Bessie who came to stand for art in my mind. I found her albums, 3 for 33 cents, in a bin on 8th Street while I was in high school. And once I listened to her, I was never the same. I don't mean her kick-ass lyrics, though those are pretty much the only blues lyrics I can stomach. I mean her stance. She had an attitude on every level, and at the same time, a cold artistry, entirely unsentimental. Her detachment equaled her commitment. She was going to sing the song through your corporeality. Unlike smoke, which circled the body, her song went right through you. And either you took what you could get at for the moment the note was moving inside you, or she wasn't for you, and you were a barrier she penetrated. Any song she sang was a second-by-second lesson in the meaning of mortality. The notes came from her and trampled through your three-dimensional body, but gracefully, a Spartan bear-like ballet. I listened to these three albums hundreds of times. Each time I learned more and more about what art took from you to make. Not love, but art. Before the compact disc revolution, you could get good or even passable albums from Ma Rainey, and she was a taste deferred. And the brilliant Alberta Hunter came into my life when I was in college, and she was singing at the Cookery in New York City, a very old black woman with a pianist as her sole accompaniment. I would have done pretty much anything to hear Big Mama Thornton live. And, of course, for me, college-age Janis Joplin was at the top, the best, the risk-taker, the one who left on the stage. When I lived in Crete, still college age, Elvis won me with Heartbreak Hotel. Even now, I can't hear it without the winds of the Aegean blowing by me. But when it comes to conveying ideas without words, jazz triumphs. A U.S. writer without jazz and blues in her veins must have ice water instead. Ugh. So that was a chapter from Andrea Dworkin's Heartbreak. Was it my favorite chapter? No. I'm going to read one more chapter, a chapter preceding this one. No, I don't want to read that chapter. It's pretty naughty. Not naughty. I don't know. You know what? Fuck it. What's going to happen? Music 2. Miss Smith used to give her students... You know what? I'm not going to read this chapter. I'm sorry. Okay. I think this stream is done for now. Just... Yeah, we got what I wanted. I did a little test stream. I think I got it recorded. The cat is right here. Al's best. Speak for me. He didn't want to talk. Yeah, I think we're just going to call it quits for today. Next week, we're going to have a more structure, blah, 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 this and that. But for now, I'm just glad something worked. Woof! Thank you for listening. Sorry for the quality. Goodbye.